Hey, welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. This episode we have my old friend Alan McNish as we are heading into Le Mans. The Wee Scott, three-time Le Mans winner, gives us his thoughts on the upcoming race, his friends at Audi, his team Audi, how they might fare along with the rest of the field. Also got to speak a bit about his protege, Harry Tinknell, who's part of the Ford GT program. Looked at some of what Alan's doing today with other responsibilities within the Volkswagen Audi group, and just general mirth and mayhem, kind of a typical conversation between he and I. We have fun. Hopefully you have fun. Off we go.
Hey, lover boy.
So you've got things to do. I've got things to do. We're both very important men, Alan. I don't know if anyone's told you, but...
I think important's one word to call it. There's a few other words to call it. I call it old.
Maybe it's impotent. I think that's what people keep telling me I am, but... Anyways,
You know, I called Damon Hill that once on a live broadcast because I meant to say that he's really found his impetus, but I said he's really found his impotence, which I tell you came. There's a few comments came in with that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet Mrs. Hill might have had a comment or two about that, but you know, that's
well,
okay.
They had three kids at the time.
Yeah, well, all right. So he had some good defense. I like that. Tell me, what are your thoughts heading into this year's 24 Hours of Le Mans? If we're looking at the P1 hybrids, they have less fuel than ever before, yet they seem to be going fairly quickly. We have fewer P1s than we did last year. I don't know. Is this going to be a great race, do you think? Is this going to be a race of attrition? What does your crystal ball tell you?
Ooh, my crystal balls. I think all of the above, actually, Marshall. There's less cars, there's six of them now, and that obviously came down to the decisions at the end of last year where Porsche and Audi had to scale back to two cars, which in a way puts them on a balanced level playing field with Toyota. So if I take my Audi hat off and put on my, you know, racing side of things, then I would say, yep, it looks as if that's pretty balanced across the whole P1H field. On the other side of it, though, I think if there was a year where you probably would want a third car, like an extra backup car, it would be this year, because everybody's pushing to the limit. Certainly from an Audi perspective, going to the 6 megajoule with a battery system as well, and all of the things that come from that, plus the fact that you've had to step up a level because of the performance of the competition, then it's brought it to the point that... you know, as we saw in the first two races, reliability is definitely not a given. And so, you know, if you were to have that extra spare car, if you like, then it would be a good time to have it. But that's not the case. So I think it will be a good race because they were a lot closer than I thought at the pretest. I thought the lap times would be spread out more, if I'm honest with you. I didn't expect, you know, at halftime at lunch, I was standing with Dr. Ulrich and we looked at it, and the last time I remember it being that close with all of the cars within, I think it was 1.2 seconds, was 1998 pretest.
Wow.
When they were all sort of bunched up. Because normally you maybe get one or two that's really close, but not the whole sort of stack. And that was, I think as a fan, that was a pretty good sign. As an Audi fan, and slightly biased to say the least, and the fact that we were in the mix, because I also expected Porsche to be maybe one step ahead in the pretest, but we were in the mix, and we were in the mix pretty much all the way through. So it's not a given by any stretch, because we don't know exactly what everybody's doing, but you know, I think it's going to be pretty tight up at the front.
What's the mood within the Audi camp heading into Le Mans? I mean, the first couple of WC rounds have been, I think, very encouraging on the developments made with the new R18, the move up in the megajoule class, etc. I mean, all signs put something positive, and that's maybe coming off of a 2015 Le Mans event that was... we're used to seeing Audi at the sharp end at all times, and we definitely saw that our friends at the sister German brand were maybe a wee bit sharper. What's the feeling inside? You think the general attitude is one of, okay, we should be at least in with a pretty serious shot at a win again?
Well, I think rewind 12 months. We were competitive at Silverstone 12 months ago. In Spa, not quite as much. But then when we got to Le Mans, you know, we were fighting for the lead until it really got to the night. And it was when it became night that we struggled a wee bitty. And that sort of broke the back of things. And then there was other issues came into it. So, but the biggest thing was that towards the end of the year, we saw when we knew we needed to make a big step forward with performance. Part of it is with the megajoule class, with a hybrid, because we were giving away a little bit too much there. And so, you know, the whole car's new. From front to back, it is basically, you know, new or at least very developed. The engine's probably the area that's had the least, but even still then, it's had quite a lot of work done on it. And I would say from a driver's perspective, it wasn't the lap time, it wasn't the result, even though Silverstone went away after the race, if you like, with the plank wear issue. Spa was a little bit of a race of attrition, and we've got to say that probably Toyota was the one that was going to win that race if everything had run according to, you know, without any reliability issues.
Sure.
But the thing for me was, as soon as the guys got out the car, in both car 7 and 8, at the pre-test, they said, yep, the car feels quite good. We need to improve this, we need to improve that. But their underlying feeling was that the car actually was working quite well. And that gives me the feeling that through the course of next week that you'll be able to work on it and develop it and just optimize it as opposed to be chasing it. And I think that's a very positive thing, because it also means that all the work they've done over the winter and also all the correlations between wind tunnel simulation X, Y, and Z to actually get it onto the circuit has actually worked.
We have a smaller P1 car count this year, yeah, from the factories. Obviously, between the number 7 Audi and the number 8, with the number 7, we have a very proven team of Marcel, Andre, and Benoit. What are your thoughts about the 8 with Monsieur Degrassi, Mr. Duval, Ollie Jarvis? I think they're ready for, they seem to me like they're more than ready to reach victory lane. But where are your thoughts there? Because between the two, it's not as if they aren't more than skilled and capable, but they've yet to stand atop the podium on their own at Le Mans.
Yeah, they do. Loic is the only one that's actually had success there. But saying that, the other two, Lucas and Ollie, have had podiums. And so therefore they know what it's like as a 24-hour race. They know what it's like to be on the podium. They just don't know what it's like to be in the podium and receiving the watch. And in that, I think the win in Spa was very important, because I'm always a big believer that, you know, you need as a group of people a bit of success to really bond you together. And as much as they've been quick, they've had good performances, they've been able to deliver, things have run against them. And I'm not a believer in luck, but they didn't have the rub of the green. There was quite a lot of times when just silly little things would happen and it would be on their car, and it didn't necessarily be in races, also in practice sessions and things like that. And it was really nice to see that suddenly at one time it actually turned for them, and it was Spa. And I think that race victory will definitely, I know it's lifted their confidence, and as a little trio. Now, it hasn't necessarily lifted their individual confidences, because they knew they could do the job. But as a team, it's actually, yeah, we've done that. We've won a race. Now we can move on. And the question mark about them winning a race is gone. Because people would start to, and it is natural, they say, oh, well, you know, that other car's won the races and this one hasn't, without necessarily understanding the background to it or really being bothered about the background to it. And now that has been not underlined, it's actually been stroked through, and they can sort of get on with a little bit more freedom and maybe a little bit of a monkey off their back. I think in terms of their capability to win the race, I don't see that as an issue. And I didn't see it last year as an issue, to be honest with you.
Sure. So when you look at the other contenders for the overall win, Do you see any particular strengths or weaknesses in the two other brands? And I ask that because if we're looking at strict reliability, all three marks have have thrown up a little bit of a red flag leading into Le Mans at the first two WC rounds. But you think there are any strengths or weaknesses Audi will face from Porsche or Toyota that I don't know, cause any concern?
Well, Porsche, they won last year. They know the car concept. They've evolved the car concept, and so they're definitely developing it. We saw that. But ultimately, they're the ones with the most experience of what they've got. So I would think that they're the team to beat, honestly. Then you go to Toyota. The thing that I would watch for with Toyota was exactly what happened in Spa. And it kind of replicated a little bit what happened at the pretest. They were kind of there, but they weren't the ones that were actually being fastest at any given point. But they were close enough where they were just there. And then when it came to the race in Spa, that's when they came through and were able to run at a very high race pace. And they were able to double stint the tire well and various other bits. And it's their race pace that I think we've got to watch out for, as opposed to their pure outright pace of one lap or, even maybe a stint. I think their race pace will be very interesting. And then from us, every time they get in the car, they're learning more about it. Because, going up on the megajoule category, which reduces your engine power, but you get more hybrid power. And that just means that there's a different sort of way of working. And every time they go out, the drivers are learning, the team's learning, and understanding a bit more about what it needs and what it wants. And it's evolving and changing all the time. And so, they go home from the test with a few more ideas and some optimization to be done.
Tell me a little bit about one of your personal projects. I was looking at a video that we did, I think, 2 years ago or so at the WEC race in Austin, and there was this kid, Tinky Tink, who had done well in P2, obviously at Le Mans, but was searching for that draft, getting drafted by a major program. Happened last year at the Nissan. Obviously, that was a disappointment for him. But how proud are you? What does this say about the kid's potential? Plus, maybe I guess his mentor might not be too bad. But he's heading to Le Mans this year with a prime factory seat. Must make you proud.
Yeah, it does. Well, it's odd. One of my most non-racing driver proud moments was, I've actually had a couple in the last little while, but it was seeing Harry coming off the podium at Le Mans in 2014, having won the P2 category. Because that day he turned from a little boy into a man, in my eyes. Because, the trials and tribulations of the problems they had at the beginning of the race, in the back of the truck thinking it had all gone away, and then suddenly digging deep and coming back and, it turning the race around, then it was a big moment. But I think when he's 20 years older than he is today, he'll look back on that particular 24-hour period and understand that it was actually the making of him. That he knew then he could dig deep. He knew then that he could actually deliver in different ways apart from just necessarily being fast out the box. And with the way that he works with the team and things. So he's definitely someone that I've got a great amount of belief in because I've seen it firsthand. I've seen him evolve firsthand. I've seen the fact that he's never really basically put a foot wrong since he got in the sports car. And he's got the enthusiasm and the drive like you wouldn't believe. And he's now going to be racing in the third for the third time at Le Mans, but also in the third different category. So he's raced in P2, he's raced in P1, and now he's racing in GTLM. And that adaptability is something that I'm actually quite impressed by, quietly underneath everything, because I strongly guided him in the direction because I thought it was the right thing to do. And underneath it all, there was that element of, well, I've never driven anything like that before. And but yeah, but I gave him the benefit of my experience of having driven the Nürburgring 24-hour GT3 car for half a day somewhere once, and he said, "Ah, they're not that bad, son. You'll be fine. You'll be fine." But
Nice.
when he got into it, the first test, he was straight away there, and the team were very happy with him. His teammates, Marino and Andy, he didn't necessarily know at the time, as in he knew them, but he didn't know who his teammates were going to be. But they've worked quietly together behind the scenes,
Sure.
and to be basically the leading charge in WEC for the Ford program is not a bad place to be. And so it's good to see that. And he's got a shot of a good result again. And the thing that I think last year, after obviously the Nissan didn't work out as anybody, including everybody in the program, wanted. But it showed a dogged determination to him, and that's something that he needs in a sports car, because not every day, not every race, not every Le Mans goes the way you want it to, but it's quite nice to see.
I guess the last question for you on the topic of 2016 is, how are you enjoying, or do you enjoy your current role more now that you have a couple years of being performance advisor, man with a sharp eye, person who tells team what better ways of doing things? Are
Yeah,
you,
that's fantastic since I started that,
yeah,
hasn't
and I'm not saying they've listened, but
it?
I'm at least asking if you have, your new role, is it something you have found comfort in and something you think you're, in a good place?
Yeah, it is. It's evolving as well, Marshall. I was asked the other day, actually, whether I miss driving. Why didn't I get back in a car? And I don't at all. I've got no feeling towards doing that. I suppose I get my kicks, if you like, out of other things. And you mentioned Harry. I do commentary as well for the BBC and Grand Prix, which keeps me sort of sharp in one other way as well. But the other side of it is Audi's been a big part of my life and career, huge part. I'm not young by any stretch of the imagination when you come to racing driver terms, but it's been a big part of the 32 years that I was racing. And I know the system, I know the way the people work, and sort of fed into it quite nicely, I would say. And as I said, it's evolved, because now I also am involved with Ducati and Lamborghini with the coordination of the Group Motorsport, the Audi Group Motorsport. And so it's quite nice to see those programs as well, and to get a bit of a feel for how things are maybe done when you go to Italy and go to Sant'Agata, or what it's like when it's on two wheels. And when the only time I've been on two wheels is when I've either been whacking a curb really hard, or alternatively, things have gone completely wrong. But it's good to see the different parts of the business.
So I'd be remiss if
And
we,
also some of the stuff that we've seen.
well, I was going to say I'd be remiss if asking, with this new role, are you loading more vehicles, two and four wheeled, into the McNish arms? I mean, are we talking cars with bull emblems and ducks? Or I mean, come on now, there must be some perks to that.
I've ridden bikes all my life, you know that. I started off in bikes.
Oh no,
I
I
had a
know.
little bike.
No, I know you were so good they
A
quickly.
little bike when I was about 4 or 5 years old, but I was so talented that my mum just put me on four wheels straight away
Well, that's what I
as
was
soon
going
as
to
I was about
say.
nine.
We remember your two-wheeled career by them promptly moving you to four wheels as quickly as possible, but
Well, I could reach the pegs. That was why I actually started karting, was because I had to go to the 80cc class, and I was sitting on the seat, my feet couldn't reach the pegs, never mind the ground. And so hence little short backside McNish was felt that it was maybe not ideal for him to be flying around in a motocross bike. But no, I've got a Ducati, and had for quite a wee while. I actually got that after Le Mans victory 2013. And
wow.
so it's a nice wee thing. It sits downstairs. Actually, tomorrow, if I'm honest with you, if it's a nice sunny day, then I'll probably go for a wee blast with it as well, just to blow off the cobwebs.
Now, do they make a sidecar that you and Mrs. McNish could go for a lovely audio ride in? No, maybe not.
Ask her when she comes home, see if she wants to do that pillion. It's a TT that's on at the moment.
Yeah. Don't get any ideas, please. We love
And
you.
that's a huge thing where I'm from. No, but they did 133 mile an hour lap today. And so in about 45 minutes tonight, I'm going to be watching that. And then the sidecar race is on as well, when you talk about sidecar stuff. But no, I don't think Mrs. McNish will be getting her knee down out of that sort of thing or leaning it out to try and get the counterbalance going.
Our women are smarter than we are. We acknowledge this on a routine basis. Well, let's close on something fun and non-current. I guess we're 19 years this year since Alan McNish made his Le Mans debut. What do you remember? Tell me some stories about Ruck racing. You had a Frenchman in Ortelli. You had an Austrian in Wendlinger, Porsche 911 GT1. The car didn't go particularly far in the race, but tell me about your any memories of Alan McNish's Le Mans debut.
Well, two memories of it. One was that I met a very, very good friend in Stefan Ortelli. Who later became my teammate the following year at Porsche, and we won together, and then we finished second again in 2000 with Laurent Ailo on both occasions. And Steph is someone that I see quite regularly because he lives very close by, and that's probably my best memory of Le Mans 1997. The other memory is that the wall at Porsche curves is bloody hard, really sore, really, really sore. It bruised the bases of my feet.
Jeez.
I know. I was shocked by that. And yeah, you were right. It was more like the 24 minutes of Le Mans as opposed to the 24 hours of Le Mans. But thankfully, we came back the following year and rectified all the things and managed to get it sorted out. But the first memory of driving, I went out the pits and I got through the S's because on the test day then you had to pre-qualify. It wasn't a case of then you were already in the race. You had to be fast. I think it was like fifth in your group, or you just didn't. You went home and you never came back. You didn't do the race. And I went out, tootled through the S's, Tetra Rouge. Thought, well, I'm going to have to floor it at some point. So I nailed it down the straight. Felt I was doing about 500 miles per hour because this French landscape was going past me far too quick. And then I hit the brakes, downshifted for the first chicane because I could see the signs coming up saying the first chicane. And then had to accelerate, change up again because I was so far away from the corner. I had never felt a circuit as fast as that in my life. I had never felt like I was going so quick, and I was so out of control in a way, how quickly everything was going. And I was, 20 seconds off the pace at the beginning. And it was just, it was, I was hanging on. I can honestly tell you now, I was hanging on. And it was a place that I just had huge amount of respect for after that because the circuit is extremely fast. All the tram lines, all the little bumps, the places where you go, where you don't go, where you think you should be, but you certainly shouldn't be. And Mr. Ortelli again was the one that guided me around all of this. And so it was the first memory, like I said, was my good God, what on earth am I doing here? But thankfully, it's given me a few wee trophies in between times.
Yeah, exactly. My first lap in driver school at Sears Point in an old Taiga Formula Ford, I did essentially the same thing heading up to turn seven. Good Lord, mate, I was doing 9,000 miles an hour and was about to be handed the Formula One World Drivers' Championship. Braked like a madman and had to downshift a few more times and reaccelerate about 200 more feet. And hang a right and privately cry inside my helmet and realize that Formula One stardom wasn't there and maybe I should get all the way to the corner before braking and turning. So, yeah, it's
Hey,
different.
crikey me, it's better than the first time I ever drove a Formula Ford car. I got three quarters way around the first lap and pirouetted, and I basically just couldn't stop spinning the bloody thing. So maybe you should have continued. Maybe you missed your real sort of calling there.
Well, with the size I've swollen up to, mate, it probably would have been better health-wise as well if I'd continued down that path. Well, always appreciated, brother. Look forward to seeing you here in a few days at the mighty Le Mans, and I'm sure we'll hopefully spin some more yarn.
I look forward to it, chap. You take care of yourself and see you in sunny France.
Thanks, brother.
And that was Alan McNish. Thanks for listening in. Check out more podcasts and other content at marshallpruitt.com.